small group of people. So please ask questions. So, and most important thing, it's whenever I would say it's a joint work with Lev Razanski. So I think most of it is in archive right now. Some stuff is in process, but I think most of it's in archive. All right, so I guess it was intended for a little bit bigger audience, but I can probably go fast for the first few slides, which are kind of not that exciting. So, all right, everybody knows here that there was a Jones polynomial, which was discovered by Jones in 1984. And then, physicists, there was a physics perspective on this invariant. So, is it written? This non-invariant is not even obvious that it's an invariant. You have to show it and it looks kind of unnatural. So, we didn't propose more geometric interpretation. Then there was work of Aguri Wafa, who proposed this interpretation for the more general invariant, Hopf-Sopwith invariant, in terms of sigma model of Konyufal. So, and there are many, many, many more work on this. So, and then I would say, after all of this work of physicists, there was this big discovery by Hamanov. So he discovered that, well, the Jones polynomial is written here for the figure eight knot. So, by the way, the picture is shamelessly stolen from the knot atlas. So that's the picture from the knot atlas of figure eight. So this is expression over here, it's the Jones polynomial, and Hamanov explained that it can actually upgrade it to the two-variable invariant. So, this one was one, now it's two. So, and he showed that you can actually construct homologous vector spaces such that, the early characteristics of this space is a Jones polynomial. All right, so then I said that this is Hopf-Sopwith. Hopf-Sopwith is just extension of a Jones construction when you introduce one more variable. And actually, Hamanov and Razanski explained that you can actually also introduce homology theory, this H star HR, such that if you take early characteristics with respect to one of the gradings, then you'll get Hopf-Sopwith polynomial. So in this talk would be about another construction of the triple graded homology. So basically, this space H star HR is actually has three gradings. So, and I will construct some other homology theory, which also has three gradings. And presumably, it's the same as this theory, but it's not obvious at the moment. So. Maybe it depends whom you ask. Actually, Lev thinks that it's not the same. I do think it's the same. So he thinks that it's not the same theory. And basically, in all examples we computed, the answers match. But who knows what happened outside of the set of examples. Okay. So yeah, that's just a reminder of our notation. So we'll be thinking about braids, about knots as the closures of the braids. So the braids is a group generated by these simple crossings. So this is the closure, picture of the closure. So you take a braid B and you close it up like this, and you get a braid, or you get a closure, or you get a link. So now I need to justify title of my talk. So why I'm saying that there's a B model. So basically, the initial construction of Hamanov and Razanski was analyzed and kind of reformulated and extended by in the work of Georgi Williamson and Ben. So it should be named, probably order should be switched, actually, alphabetically. Sorry. So
I don't get to be the first author on very many papers, you know.
That's right. Okay. So yeah, you need to find the co-authors which start with Z, I guess, or something. Yeah.
I have written papers with Milan Yakimov and with Alex Weeks and Oded Yacobi, and I got to be.
Okay. Yeah, that's right. Yes. All right. So sorry for this. So, but basically, very rough, very rough statement that is proven in these papers of Ben and Georgi is that for every braid that touch a perverse sheaf on this double quotient of GLN on two sides by upper triangular matrices, and Havanov homologies, Havanov-Rosansky homologies obtained basically by restricting this equivariant structure double on to the, so basically this perverse sheaf have two equivariant structures, one with respect to this action of Bn and then another one with respect to the other side, and then we restrict it to the only diagonal action conjugation, and then this and take homologies of this sheaf, and then there is this magic differential chromatography, which I don't understand. It's kind of crazy element of the construction, and magically, if you take homologies of this complex, it will reconstruct back. It will give you back. Will give back construction of Havana from Rosansky. So it's on the nose.
What's a triangle?
Oh, it's triangle. It means it's diagonal. It's action by conjugation. So, right? So that's this paper.
Hmm? That because you're closing the.
Yeah, because you're closing this. Yeah, that's basically the reason. Yeah, exactly. So and So as I said, so the homologies this.
So if you when you compose braids,
yeah.
Do you also need to add a differential?
No, when you compose the differential, the chromatographic doesn't appear. It only appears when you take a closure.
Yes.
So and then there is another kind of amazing feature of this construction that actually this homologous acquires two double gratings from the from two weight filtration. One weight filtration because GLN is non-compact, and another weight filtration comes from the fact that what was this another one I forgot. So another one was because some other non-compactness. So
because the when you do the convolution, you're also doing kind of convolution with respect to a non-compact thing.
That's right. Okay. So that's
one way to think about this is like the sheaf phi has a canonical weight filtration, and you know this Havanov-Rosansky homology is the first page of the spectral sequence, the E2 page, when you try to compute homology of the whole sheaf using that filtration, and somehow the whole spectral sequence is an Ottenberry.
So yeah, I should admit that I don't quite understand the whole construction in a lot of details. You know, that's. So you can ask Ben more about it. So it's somewhat mysterious to me. So and now I just restate Ben and Georgi construction here. So we'll say that roughly perverse sheaves on this quotient is basically Bn equivariant constructible sheaves on the flag variety, because this quotient GLN mod Bn it's a flag variety. So this is like roughly the same as the Fukaya category, Bn equivariant Fukaya category on cotangent bundle on the flag variety by theorem of Zaslov and Nadler and Zaslov. That's they have this equality, and you can say this is a model for T star flag variety. So okay, so that's all kind of roughly just connecting dots. Now on the question, what would be, do we have a B model for this B version of this construction? And another way to say it, can we compute this triply graded homology using coherent sheaves instead of constructible sheaves? So basically, you know, the Ben and George's construction uses constructible sheaves. So, and that's what I will explain, how you can use coherent sheaves. All right, so how it all started. So basically, I actually will give a talk at the MUD department where I will explain more or less history, how we arrived to whole story. So, but the way I present it now is kind of backwards. So initially, we started with looking at the examples. So we looked at the examples of torus knots. So basically, first we wanted to compute homologies, triply graded homologies of the torus knots. And at the time when we started looking at it, there was no answers or even conjectures for these things. And it's kind of quite a big class of knots. And so again, I have stolen this picture from the knot atlas. So these are torus knots and torus links. And in the next few slides, I will explain you what are the triple grade homologies of these knots. So it's kind of a big class of knots. They were so-called thick knots. And more or less, if something is true for these knots, it's probably true for all knots. So more algebraically, what are the torus knots? So, you know, we take this element of the braid group, which I called Coxeter element, so which is basically a product of all crossings. So it's basically a braid where one strand goes across from first position to the last position. And the torus knot TMN is just a closure of this, of M's power of this element. So basically just go around. What? So this is the torus knots, right? So that's the picture. So this is a 2-3 torus knots. We take one crossing and repeat it 3 times.
And just go back to the previous picture.
Okay, previous picture.
Yes.
So this is the Coxeter element.
Okay.
This is Coxeter element on the braid group, and you take just M's power of it.
And what is L?
L is a closure, actually, it was in the previous slide. So this is L. So that's L. So basically, take a braid and close it up like this. Okay? More questions? Yeah, if something is unclear, please ask. So it's not many slides. So, and.
I see 82 pages.
okay, it's true. Scroll through some of them. So anyways, all right. So then before all of this construction with Zlev, there was a conjecture, which kind of appears more or less at the same time. We kind of dragged our feet with putting it out. So now our paper is in 2012, and there is a paper of Ganagic and Shakir from 2011. So, but the statement is that if you want to compute triple graded homologies of this torus knot, actually, this torus knot. So basically, that means you take this Coxeter element on n strands, and you take this power of this Coxeter element. Then it's just equal to the global sections of some particular sheaf, coherent sheaf, on the Hilbert scheme of n points on C2. So, and I will explain what is Z and the B and L on the next slide. So, and why it's nice? Why it's a nice formal? Because actually, this sheaf. It has action of C star cross C star. So everything is coherent. And actually, that means that this space also have extra 2 gradings. And then you can just use the collidation formula to compute explicitly both sides. It gives you explicit answer, which I will not present. But you know, for people who like explicit answers, you can write it. So OK, so just a reminder, what is the Hilbert scheme? So it just Hilbert scheme of endpoints on C2. It just manifold which parameterizes ideals inside of the polynomial of 2 variables, ring of 2 variables, and codimension is n of the ideal. So, so roughly, it is some kind of compactification of the symmetric power and symmetric power of C2. If you like, it's desingularization, resolution of singularities of this power. So basically, symmetric and symmetric power of C2 is singular, but we can resolve singularities and get this smooth object, Hilbert scheme of points on C2, and the map from the Hilbert scheme of points to the symmetric power is a natural one. So you take ideal, take a quotient, and you look at the support of the quotient. So basically, you look at the points which define this ideal. Okay. So then this object Z, this. That's often people call it punctual Hilbert scheme. It's basically the sub-scheme inside of the Hilbert scheme of points on C2, some singular sub-variety inside of the Hilbert scheme of C2, which consists of the ideals with support of the quotient is just 0. So it's basically one fat point, one very fat point. And then you know on this modular space of the shifts, there is this universal vector bundle of rank n. This is B check more precisely, like dual to it, which is just a quotient. So, all right. So, and L is a determinant. So, and basically, And then we have action of C star cross C star on C2. It induces action on the Hilbert scheme, and we have double grading on this space. So, and that's the space which appeared in the conjecture before. So let me just.
SC.
It means scaling. It just acts by scaling. So I kind of kept notations similar to our papers with left. So if anybody by some point decided to look, so the paper. So this was a conjecture. So that was a conjecture. So that the Havarna-Frassansky homology is the same as a sections, as a global section of this sheaf on this punctual Hilbert scheme on this singular subride inside of the Hilbert C2. All right? Any questions? So. I think at this point, this conjecture is proven actually by some kind of other means. Basically, like last summer, there were papers by.
Is this doubly graded, triply graded?
It's triply graded. It's actually quadruply graded.
From C star squared.
Yeah, sorry, it's triply graded. Because so one grading has come from this dot, you take exterior power, and then you have C star cross C star action.
So. Is there a statement that there's no Hayek homology?
There is a statement that there is no Hayek homology, which is due to Hyman, which is a very hard statement to prove. So a priori, I could have replaced here by taking global all of the degrees, but all of the higher degrees will vanish. But it's a non-trivial statement. Yeah, you're right. Thanks. All right. More questions?
What's so special about this particular torsion?
What is so special about this one? Oh, was it special compared to the other ones?
Yeah,
you will see it in other slides because it's very because basically you start, if you take closure of this one, just of this element, you'll get a knot. So now to get this torus knot, you just take full twist and add it n times. So basically n's power of Coxeter element is a full twist when you every strand just goes around 180 degrees. And actually, operation of the adding full twist is actually a very simple operation, as I will explain. I'll explain later that in our homologies with Leff, operation of adding full twist is very canonical. You just multiply it by this line bundle. So basically, now this knot is very special because you basically start with this easier knot, and you add full twist several times, and that's you know.
Did you exchange N and M?
No, this is correct.
Because up there it says that right. The first number is the power.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah, you're right. Thank you. Yes, I didn't. All right. More questions? Thanks. All right. So, as I say, now at this point, the conjecture is proven. But it's proven by by a very indirect means. So basically, both sides in 2017, Hogenkamp and Mallet, they put out paper where they just by brute force compute this dimensions of these graded pieces, and they compared with dimensions of these pieces, and that part in like people were interested in this thing for a long time because it's related to this QT Catalan number, and there's a lot of combinatorics and tons of papers, and you have to combine all of this machinery to prove the statement. And it's absolutely not clear at all from the proof why there is a Hilbert scheme here. So because it's just like literally some explicit things. And I will explain why Hilbert scheme is relevant. Okay. All right, so that was the Hilbert scheme stuff. Well, okay, that's a Hilbert scheme. You can think about it as a quiver, like this. So that's everybody knows here. All right, so we actually put out more general conjectures. So we're saying that in this paper in 2012, and later it was upgraded in a much more precise statement in this paper of Gorski, Nygut, and Rasmussen. So the first was this paper by Gorski, me, Rasmussen, and Schende. So that there is a canonical way to construct a sheaf, FB and F beta, for every braid. Such that if you take its total homologies of the sheaf, then you'll get a triple graded homologies. So that's one more.
Are you going to say what F Hilbert is?
What is F Hilbert? Yes, I will say that means it's a flat Hilbert scheme. So actually the precise statement should be that you need to work with the flat Hilbert scheme. So in the first paper, we conjectured the conjecture that you can actually construct a sheaf on the usual Hilbert scheme, and it was kind of upgraded to the this flat Hilbert scheme in this next paper. But you know, one maps to another. If you have a sheaf on one, you can push forward on another, then you know, global sections do not change. All right. So that's a conjecture. And yeah, so here's the F Hilb. So that's just, instead of looking at the one ideal, we look at the chain of ideals such that, you know, each, this chain of ideals, it's strict inclusion and the codimension of difference of dimension is one. So basically go one dimension. Okay, so and the problem with this space that is very singular actually. So it's kind of very hard to work with that. It's basically it's as bad as Hilbert scheme of points on points on C3. So it's pretty awful. But you can work with this SDG scheme. And that's what kind of was suggested in this paper of Gorski, Nygut, and Rasmussen. Okay, so and we actually got around it with LEF. We did do something different. So you can think about this F Hilbert scheme, as you would see later, as a critical loss of some potential. So then you can kind of smooth out, you know, you can kind of avoid all of this horrible algebraic geometry.
So this association of F beta to beta, does it have anything to do with this work of Bistrokovnikov?
It does have something to do with that. So. So.
Can I actually get it from there?
No. You can, so that's, you probably can, but you have to prove some kind of, how to say it, you have to lift a lot of things to the B equivariance level. So maybe you can. So but we choose not to, because we need to, it kind of takes a while to explain why you cannot use that construction. So there was a paper of Arkhipov and Kanstru, where they construct something similar to that. But we do it independently because we need to know more details about the action to prove our series. Okay, I'll show you later. So what's going on? It's related. All right. So this conjecture is true.
I mean, is there a way to sort of think about the flag Hilbert scheme somehow in terms of the affine flag variety?
Affine flag variety. Probably you can.
The Bray group, or the affine Bray group, X for example, and
So that's more has to do with Rukavnikov's construction, is about Steinberg, usual Steinberg, not affine Steinberg.
Yes, okay.
So, anyway. Yes.
So, you mentioned it was the critical locus of some potential.
Right.
Is it obvious geometrically why it has a shifted symplectic structure? Like, doesn't seem clear.
Probably it does have shifted symplectic structure, you know, but
it's a critical locus. It does.
Yes, yeah.
The geometry of it doesn't look like sheaves and plenty of threefold.
No, I don't know. It's not obvious to us, you know.
Why do I think it should have a certain, I mean, it's flat, so somehow. Do you think it should have a sort of shifted symplectic structure?
Well, if you said it was a critical locus.
Yeah, it's a shifted symplectic structure. It's critical locus. All right, so. All right, so conjecture is true, but you have to adjust this thing. So it's not just coherent shifts on a thing. You have to kind of change a little bit things. So I'll explain in a second. All right, so it turns out that the good way to think about all of the construction is to think about this free Hilbert scheme. So basically, the flag Hilbert scheme, as I explained you before, is very singular, but there is some kind of a better object. So this is a free Hilbert scheme, which is basically you take the same definitions before, but you don't require x and y commutes. So basically, free Hilbert scheme is, it consists of triples, x and y and v. So basically, x is upper triangular, y is strictly upper triangular. And the condition is that if you apply all of the polynomials of x and y to v, you'll get whole space.
You mean by divided by v instead of GLN?
Yes, you're right, divided by B, so thank you. It's very attentive audience. That's very nice.
I said this last time you gave this talk.
I did. You did. All right.
First thing about slide talks is you can't make that change in real time, so you always forget about it by the time.
All right. Yeah, you did.
Okay. Slides. I sympathize.
All right. So that adjustment we have to do. We have to do this periodic. Periodic complexes. So basically, instead of working with complexes, we're working with two periodic complexes. Basically, it's we have C1 and C0, and differentials are also periodic. So now the theorem is that for every element of the Braid group, we can construct two periodic complex on the free Hilbert scheme. So the one thing I should say that about this free Hilbert scheme, that this guy is smooth. So, and it's actually more, it's actually fibered by projective spaces. It has very clear geometry. So we construct for every element of the Braid group, two periodic complex of shifts on this free Hilbert scheme, such that support of its homologies is an usual Feliac Hilbert scheme, and if you take total homologies of this complex, you'll get Homfli PT homologies of the closure. So this thing here is just a shift homologies, meaning that you take kernel of this map D0 quotient by the image, and you got a shift on the free Hilbert scheme, but it has support, scheme theoretic support on this free Hilbert scheme. So basically, like, we're using the standard trick in derived algebraic geometry. Instead of thinking about very single object, we embed single object in something smooth, and we're just thinking about complexes on a big smooth object with support of homologies on the singular guy. So that's kind of our way around. Okay. So now I should also say, what does it mean, Homf? Yes.
So why periodic complexes?
You can lift it to Z, you can actually lift it to the usual complexes. That's just technically, it's just technical things, but you can lift it, you can remove this periodic thing.
Could you say it's because this is to do with the Rosansky-Witten theory, or equivalent gauge theory, and Stimo-2 graded theory?
We did the periodic thing because let me just say one more thing. So you can actually lift this all of these objects not to the two periodic complexes, but the actual honest complexes, and you'll get extra grading on these things. But this grading is not topological invariant, so we don't care. So in theory, you can lift everything, so it will be extra grading.
You mean that it depends on the Braid, but not on the.
Yes, it depends on the. It actually depends on the. Closure on the conjugacy class of Braid only, but when you define isotopy invariant, you have to prove this that it's also invariant with respect to Markov move, and Markov move destroys this force grading. So it's just technically easy to work with two periodic thing. Just don't care about.
Can I ask a stupid question? In this non-commutative setting,
yeah,
what is the definition of B?
B? What do you mean? B?
Vector bundle B.
It's the same. So you just it's before you take quotient, just trivial bundle V. But after you take quotient by B, it becomes something non-trivial. So yeah. More questions? All right, so now I will explain why this theory is nice. What's interesting about this theory. So inside of the Braid group, there are the special elements which I denoted by delta I, so which is basically a Braid which starts in ith partition, goes around and comes back. And if you take product of these elements from n to k, you'll get partial twists on the first k strands. So, and good thing about these elements that they actually mutually commute. They kind of form, if you take this delta I's, they commute with each other. So you have a big commutative algebra inside of the Braid group. So And we show actually that this algebra have a natural interpretation of commutative elements, natural interpretation on coherent side. So basically there is this like line bundles Li, which is just basically like quotients of this big ideal by small ideal. So let me just remind you. So we had here this sequence of ideals, and you can take subsequent quotients and you get line bundles. So in this commuting elements, they have this interpretation as this line bundle. So basically, theorem here that if you take a braid and compose it with this element delta, I guess this element delta should be called Bernstein element. So it's Bernstein element delta, then the corresponding shift will be just twisted by this line bundle. So it's very easy to compute a lot of examples. So basically, if you found answer for some beta, then you found answer for all possible
twists. What is phi?
Phi is this map which we constructed with Lev. So phi is okay. So that was I guess it was
same as L. What was
I guess it's phi of beta is f beta. Okay. All right. Thanks. Right.
What is this Li? The previous line Li restricted to where to I
naught. So basically, if you take a
this is just definition.
That's just definition of the Li. Okay. So basically, it's easy in this series. It's very easy to compute action of this Bernstein elements. So why it's nice? Because now we can actually kind of reprove the previous theorem about this torus knots. So first of all, there is this flag Hilbert scheme also has an analog of the this functional Hilbert scheme the same way. So basically you have a map of the flag Hilbert scheme to usual flag to usual Hilbert scheme. So you take pre-image under this map inside of the pre-image under this map, and you get this flag version of this functional Hilbert scheme. And what we showed also in the paper that if you take this Coxeter element, Coxeter n, then the corresponding shift is just a structure shift, some virtual structure shift, which I'll explain at the end, of the functional Hilbert scheme. Okay, so.
The break group you're working with, is it usual break group or affine break group?
Actually, we actually can extend action to the affine braid group. I'll explain affine braid group in a second. It's a kind of important thing. So the affine braid group will appear in a second. So far, I talked only about finite braid group. Okay. So and there is extension of this thing. On, you can replace Coxeter element by this partial Coxeter element where you take like subset. Just anyway, there is a large class of examples. All right. So let me say. How many knots you captured in these Coxeter links? Well, if you take this this partial Coxeter element for no elements, you just start with identity element, and then you get a closure of the any product of this Bernstein elements. In particular, if you do this, you'll get this torus link. So we have answer for the torus link, and all torus knots also there. So basically, you can. They're also Coxeter elements. They're also Coxeter links. So basically, we have answer for all of the torus elements, torus knots. So and we also expect some explicit formula for the links that are obtained by from a knot by some Coxeter cabling procedures. We haven't done that yet. So, but it's kind of more general.
You're saying that you can do it for any link,
I want to have explicit answer. So for any link, I can construct something. You know, in principle, there's some. Construction, but I want to have some explicit nice answer. And I explain you nice answer for the torus guys, and we expect that actually it's much bigger class of examples you can compute. All right, so now I have to explain some physics.
Yes.
So, sorry for that, all of that. So, finally, maybe something interesting to people. So, where it all comes from? So, it all, you know, all of this. Construction comes from this Kapustin-Salurina-Razansky model. So basically, they proposed some kind of a realization of 3D topological field theory in 2008. And what we do with Lev, actually, we kind of compute some first example of this K as our model. So let me just remind you what is this KSR model. So basically, so we construct, we take three category, and objects of three category are holomorphic symplectic manifolds, and the homes between the objects are this thing, which is a triple, where you have a Lagrangian in the product of x, y, and you have a vibration over the Lagrangian. Vibration, we don't impose any condition on vibration. Could be non-smooth, fibers can jump as much as you want. There's no constraints. Okay, so now the question is how you compose this homes. Well, in a natural way, so you take, if you have one home and another home, so then you just compute this, you just form this product. So basically your Lagrangians basically intersect. So, and then you adjust vibration accordingly. So there's a natural way to compose this. All right, so, and that's just a reminder what is a product over the Z. So, and the interesting thing, so since it's three category, so the homes, so now we expect that if you have two homes between x and y, then the home between homes would be one category. And here's the answer. So basically, these two guys are homes. So then the home between homes is this derived category of coherent sheaves on this derived intersection. So I'll give you a toy model in a second. So that looks like very general and complicated. So for our purpose, we'll actually need smaller three category, which will, I don't know, the three category of manifolds. The objects would be just manifolds, complex manifolds. And the homes are much simpler. Homes are just, you take any manifold Z and you take a function, which is a function on the triple.
So they're not symplectic manifolds anymore?
Well, you know, we will get a symplectic manifold if you take cotangent bundle. So basically, this category, as I will say in a second, they're just a subcategory of symplectic manifolds, which are cotangent bundle to the manifolds.
Okay.
So that's smaller and it's easier to work. And we also restrict kind of set of the morphisms, which are you.
The homes are essentially Lagrangians, which have a generating function.
That's right, exactly. Yeah, the W is a generating function. Yes, exactly. So I will say it in a second. So, yeah. So and then the composition is also very simple. You just, if you take composition of the thing, you just take difference of the functions. And here our favorite object appears, this matrix factorization. So basically, if you want to compute home between homes, then you end up working with matrix factorizations. Potentials. All right, so let me just give a little bit more comments. So what are the matrix factorizations? So they were discovered by Eisenbald. So they're two periodic complexes with this property. So if you square it, you get this potential W. Well, here's the example. So if you take, for example, a potential X4, then this two periodic complex is an example of matrix factorization. All right, so now I will explain what David was saying, so that our smaller category of manifolds embeds inside of the big category by this generating function construction. So basically, if you have a ZW, you can construct this submanifold FW, which is given by this equation. And that's exactly this generating function construction. And we need to impose, if you impose condition that W's critical loss of W inside of the zero locus of W, you actually construct embedding inside of the, from the matrix factorization into derived, into the coherent sheaves. So that's, you need this condition for this to work, but you can do it. So, all right, so actually we need even small example. What the example which we work with, objects would be this manifolds. So GLN, so, you know, symplectic holomorphic symplectic variety is just cotangent bundles to GLN. And we also, GLN has a two side, like actions of GLN on both sides, left and right. So, and the Holms would be now from GLN to GLM would be Z with Hamiltonian GLN GLM action. So it's right. So, and then embedding is, you know, that's now we want to embed this GLN category inside of the category of the manifolds. So basically,
this is without the man.
I embedded inside of the man, so manifolds.
Z means Hamiltonian, but Z lies where now?
What that?
Z lies in the product.
Z nowhere, it's just somewhere. Just any Z with action of GLN and GLN.
But it should be symplectic, right? I mean, it's.
Yeah, it should be symplectic, yes. Yeah. So if it's Hamiltonian, it's symplectic. Right. So, and you know, the embedding inside of this previous category, we just take a moment map, use moment map. So and
so the manifold is GLN itself.
Manifold is GLN itself, right? Yeah. So in holomorphic symplectic, the manifold is GLN itself. Right. So that's it's some kind of basically smaller category because our function W is quadratic. It's much smaller one. All right. So and let's take the smallest example. So let's make Z to be cotangent to the flag variety, which is very nice. Symplectic variety. So you can think about it as a quotient of GLN times upper triangular matrix by B. So then the moment map in these coordinates is just you take, you know, this is element G and this is your upper triangular guy. And that's the function you get, this pairing of the moment map with Z. So that's actually home from GL0 to GLN. Mm-hmm.
So this tau GLN would appear in physics, for example, if you had a four-dimensional theory.
Oh, really?
Compatible on a segment.
Uh-huh. And then you get this kind of...
theory Clermont-Lang conditions at the end. Then the Wilson loop from one end to the other would be... from one end of the segment to the other would be a GLN.
Oh, okay. I see. Oh, that's very interesting. So I would love to see the derivative, like where I can look, when I can read more about it. So where I should look for this? This construction?
I'm sure, but we can discuss it.
Okay. Yeah. So, and you know, the interesting thing is to say like self-home. So basically, what is self-home? So basically, you take two copies of this space over GLN, and you get this potential. So that's our main object. So we construct it. We basically it appears naturally from this Kapustin-Razansky-Saulin series. So that's. That's how we derived it. Well, honestly, that's how Lev derived it. I want to be honest. He's a physicist.
So here the auxiliary manifold is the star of the flag.
Yes.
Exactly. With the GLN action.
Right, right.
So the GLN has two GLN actions, but does it matter at all? I mean, left and right.
Yes, we use both of them. So we use both of them.
Maybe that used symmetrically.
So how to say?
In the previous slide, I think I didn't.
So just a second. So in this case, it's so here it's a home from GL. Sorry, I lied. Yeah. It's for GL zero. So it's sorry. We have GLN GL zero. So basically, in this case, we have only one action of GL.
Manifold is the
Lie
algebra,
no? Manifold is just Lie algebra. Yes.
Ah, okay. Sorry.
Yeah, it's actually important. Yeah. So in physics, it's more like groups?
No, I don't know.
Okay.
I'm trying to figure out what the physics...
Mm. Okay.
Did you figure it out? Can you tell me?
No. Okay.
It's like a boundary condition of equidistance or something.
No, this should be just sigma models, but I don't know. So these are sigma models in this tau of the algebra.
I mean, it's kind of... I can never remember. So maybe this factorization means that we can see the
quantity sigma models
such that the square is equal to the potential.
That's right.
Interfaces defined by matter fields with two GL actions.
So what is the target of the sigma model? Hmm? What is the target of the sigma model, you said?
Well, GLN. The Lie algebra GLN, I think.
And what's the role of...
two sigma models.
What's the role of Z?
Is that you're trying to make an interface between two 3D.
I see.
Models and you do it by coupling 2D degrees of freedom by super potential.
Related to the bubble map?
Yes. The sign displacement potential is a function. I mean, if you have a single model in the cotangent of a manifold, there are some naive boundary conditions where you set the fiber to zero. Then you can deform these boundary conditions by coupling to two degrees of freedom by scope potential, which is a function on the manifold and on the degrees of extra degrees of freedom. And this modifies the boundary conditions exactly as written there, so that the fiber position becomes now the derivative of the scope potential respect to the foot base.
Did you also mention that the whole thing can be embedded into 4D?
That was wrong, sorry, I misunderstood. Okay. Now he's focusing on manifolds which are this star of the Li algebra GLF. And the interface defined by a quadratic and a cubic expression, right? So
it's cubic, yeah, it's cubic.
Zero degrees of freedom and linear in the Li algebra.
But is it important that the superposition defining the interfaces is always given by some moment map, or is that?
Well, I don't know.
What is the question? So then
you could have written down any kind of arbitrary polynomial in GLN, depending on your auxiliary fields.
Right.
But you didn't. You only wrote down ones coming from moment maps.
Right.
So was that important?
Well, this.
What is the significance of that? I don't know. That just worked. You know, this thing worked. You know, the left showed me the thing, and I did what he told me. So.
So I mean, this. Have to get lab.
Yeah. All right. So actually, here's the affine braid group that appears. So actually, for every n, there is a morphism of a affine braid group inside of this category of matrix factorizations. So there's some.
Of what? Sorry, MFN, you're saying?
Yeah, so MFN is.
Processing, right? So you're saying that there is this phi, which was a special boundary condition for GLN
right.
Sigma model, and now you're looking at endomorphisms of this phi, which are lines at this boundary.
I think it must be more than the GLN sigma model, because it must be the quiver he wrote down.
Well, a lot of stuff extends to the other quivers, you know, that we're kind of writing some other things for the other quivers.
You wrote down the particular affine quiver.
Yeah.
And that quiver is not associated with the GLN sigma model.
Yes, that's right. You don't have to be GLN. It could be quiver, and you could.
When you just focus on this quiver, I presume that you're looking at the 3D quiver gauge theory for that quiver, which is a little bit like the GLN sigma model, but not quite. Because you're also gauging GLN and also these other fields. Mm-hmm. So I presume you must be looking at boundary conditions for the 3D quiver gauge theory.
Matrix factorization themselves, though, are just. I mean, what is in this light is just boundary conditions for the GLN. But I agree
for the X and Y in that quiver.
Yes.
And the rest of it is carried around.
That's possible, right? I mean, once you define them for the. For that joint field, they would induce things for the
exactly
for the quiver, right?
Because you did write down a boundary condition for that quiver earlier.
Right.
You said
right.
X was in B and Y was in N.
That's right.
And this looks like some kind of numpole boundary. No.
That's what?
Yes, like X and B and Y and N is exactly a numpole for that quiver. For the 3D category.
This category of matrix factorizations, I mean, it's a tensor, it's a monoidal category, right?
Right, so that's
it doesn't have anything to do with the derived category of Steinberg variety in this case.
It does have something to do with that, probably.
Is there a function of interaction, or?
Potential.
Yes, probably there are functors. You probably can construct functors in it.
What I'm asking is that somehow we do know that there's such a map into
Yeah, I know. You're talking about the Bezruk-Kavnikov construction.
Yes.
Yeah, so it's probably related to that. So.
So how does this? When you use this moment map, so roughly how does the boundary condition looks like? You have X equals to something important.
Oh, did you say you're talking about this? You know, why we have?
I'm trying to use this. So here you're supposed to give a Lagrangian manifold. This maps to a Lagrangian manifold.
That's right.
How does the Lagrangian manifold looks like? X is nilpotent.
Oh, the Lagrangian manifold is kind of strange. It's something like it's a conormal bundle to the nilpotent cone, but it's kind of derived. How to say it? So basically, it's pairs of the matrices X and Y, where X is nilpotent and Y commutes with it. So it's a conormal bundle to the nilpotent cone.
Okay, so that's
things in that bowl.
I think so, yeah.
Oh, so you're recognizing this thing somehow, or?
I want to say it's an M2-bed in another fiber, which is what Witten told us gives us kind of homology.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, so there is zero equal. Oh. Okay. Huh. All right, so.
Okay, so.
And now, and these are supposed to be lying.
So then, you know, the fine-grained group also had this. So we'll come back to this physics last slide, I guess, later. So I'll just quickly finish through this math stuff. So this, there is a fine-grained group, and there is an analog of this element's delta small, which also have the same shape. But in a fine-grained group, we have this flagpole, the red. So and you can go around it, and then you get some kind of non-trivial element if I strand goes around it. So there is a forgetful map. Basically, if you remove this red pole, then you go from the affine braid group to the usual braid group. You just remove this red. So, okay, so here something for Sasha. So basically, maybe all of the stuff which we did before is in Bezrukavnikov and somebody else and like Langlands, but this stuff I don't think it's anywhere. So this new thing, so this new phenomena. So there is a new thing, basically the space X, which I explained to you before, there was no stability condition. Let me point out that the space over here, this thing, I didn't impose any stability condition. So now we impose the stability condition. Inside of this space of the before, we take open piece where we impose condition that there is vector V such that these two guys generate everything. You cut out some open piece. So the cool thing is that there is also this forgetful map. You can pull back objects from this bigger object to this open piece. And actually, this pullback actually intertwines forgetful functor. So basically, we kind of explain categorification of this forgetful map. So basically, map from the affine braid group to the finite braid group.
So if you consider this matrix factorizations on the open part, then it's still a monoidal character.
It's not obvious, but it needs to be proven. Yeah, we prove it.
But it's true.
It's true. Yeah.
But what does it mean prove it? I mean, you need some construction on the monomial structure. So.
Well, the monomial structure is the same, but you have to show that this convolution is commutes with this restriction to the open piece. So you know the it's some computation because when we do convolution, we integrate along kind of fibers. And if you impose the wrong open condition, you would have to cut the fibers. You would cut fibers. So that would be bad. That then it would be. We show that basically, as you cut out the open piece, so the basically the this doesn't interfere with convolution. So it's something to show. You know, it's not immediately obvious.
Well, the basic function why before it was an authentic is because it was endomorphism of some object in your two category.
Yeah, that's also you can introduce some other category, frame category. It's no problem. So that you can upgrade everything with this framed vector. So it also probably has some physics interpretation.
And then it will be obviously monoidal category.
What do you mean by obvious? You have to show something. You know, it's not. I don't know. It depends on your definition of obvious. How.
Obviously, if you believe in M theory.
What?
If you believe in M theory.
Yeah, if you believe in M theory, probably you know, so something is obvious. All right, so, and just let me just explain your construction of the node homology. So basically, I should point out that we have embedding of this free Hilbert scheme inside of this framed convolution space X. So basically, you just put this group elements to be one, just restrict them to identity. And the actually construction of our element F beta is very simple. You just do pull back along this map. And we get, as you pull back, you see that potential turn into zero. So basically, this potential W, which we had before, if you restrict it to this subset, it will just turn into zero. So now we have a matrix factorization with zero potential, which is the same as two periodic contours. That's our construction. So and then it's some kind of computation. You have to show that it's an isotopy invariant. So basically, you need to show that there is a Markov move when you remove strand, that it's invariant with respect to this thing. And that's not obvious and somewhat surprising, but it works. So
this is drawn only for the homology, not for the object.
Not for the object. So the object itself is only conjugacy invariant, but the Markov move, first of all, you go from the, it's not even possible to say, it cannot change its hand. You cannot even state the statement. So, all right, so, okay, where's Flagg-Hilbert scheme? So then, I have 2 minutes to finish it. So first of all, there is this Knorr reduction. So you can always kind of cut down your space to the smaller space. So basically, it's because our initial potential had actually some quadratic term, and you can remove quadratic term and work with smaller space, which is this space. So and on this space, you'll have a smaller potential, W bar. And now the critical loss of this potential is, well, you can do it to your calculus students, and they would see that it's a Flagg-Hilbert scheme. So that's, if you take derivative by g, you get this equation. If you take derivative by x, you get this. Take derivative by y, you get this. That's exactly Flagg-Hilbert scheme. So, and then, again, calculus observation. So, this is a chain rule for differentiation. So that this derivative, so the potential actually act by null homotopies on matrix utilization. So that's why this pullback of our complex actually has homotopy support only on the Flagg-Hilbert scheme. So it's supported on this by this simple observation. All right, so then, the last two slides. So actually we can construct theory for this GLN, GLM homologies, because this Havanna-Frassansky homology is, in some sense, it's an analog of the Homfli polynomial where you have GLN where N is kind of continuous parameter. But then there is this non-trivial problem in homology theory, how to construct actual GLN homologies, and actually has very geometric interpretation in this case. So in this case, you have the free Hilbert scheme actually has some kind of natural, this bundle B has a natural section, which is written here, form of the section. And you can actually construct some differential from this, and then you can construct this different homologies with this extra correction term, which accounts for this supergroup. And that's, we show that it's a knot invariant, and we conjecture that that's a knot invariant which comes from GLN and MT series.
Sorry, I haven't got to follow the slides.
Yeah.
At the top, do you still like the free Hilbert scheme for GLN or for GLN slash M?
For GLN. So, sorry, this should be K or something. It has nothing to do. These two ends are different.
Okay.
So, yeah, for these numbers, you can choose any M or K. So, yeah, so that's. So, for example, you can recover your original Havanov homologies if you set N to be 0 and M equal 2. So, that would be Havanov homologies. So this is extra differential. So that's all right. So that's the conjecture, and that's it actually. That's, yes.
This section.
Yeah. So this is the section.
So how do you use the section again? So you have a section, and then
if you have a section, so this is a section of this B. You can always contract it with this with exterior power and lower the degree of exterior power. So that gives you differential going from this 1 degree down. So and then you take this complex, which is like our original, the differential from the complex itself plus this extra differential. That's supposed to, that is again isotopy invariant, which only have two gradings because, this extra differential it changes the third grading, but this double graded space is also isotopy invariant, and conjecturally that's GL. MN homology.
So this is going from Homfli to a specific.
Yeah, to specific, yes. So from Homfli to specific Chen Simon group guys.
But this is not you're just taking the whole complex, but you're changing the differential.
I adjust differential here, so I just add this thing.
But that means that some kind of Euler characteristic doesn't change, right?
Yeah, it doesn't change.
That,
some Euler characteristic.
That probably should mean something in the homology that.
It doesn't mean anything not homology because it means something in polynomials, and hopefully PT polynomials, which is not that interesting. And there you can.
Okay, so about polynomials means something that somehow that.
You can do some spectral sequences and stuff. There are a lot of things you can derive from this thing.
But I mean, it means that some kind of polynomial only depends on n, and that does depend on n, right? Something like that.
I don't quite know what you
Maybe
mean.
It depends. Because, I mean, you're saying that, I mean, before, when you had just only M, index
yeah.
M and no M.
Yeah.
You had, you had the same thing, but for the old differential. So now you're doing something with the new differentials. So that means that some polynomials that they're computing
mm-hmm.
the same.
So they only depend on N minus M.
I mean, well, yeah, I'm a little confused about the indices, but somehow, I mean, there should be some kind of identity about some kind of not polynomials, which is responsible for it, which makes this possible.
Compute the like Rushtigan-Triev invariants of the super Lie algebras GLMN. The answer you get, you know, for this particular case, only depends on the super dimension. That's somehow like the only thing that comes into kind of the answer you get is the super.
Okay, so, all right, that's all. That's all that I had to say. So, yeah, please, ask questions. So it seems like the most exciting slide was this one. So maybe David can tell us a little bit more.
But I'm interested, do you prove that it's equal to the old knot homology? We won't have this kind
No, of we don't prove that it's the same knot homology. So we have a long discussion with Roma, and maybe we can prove some kind of version that it's the same. It would go through his construction. But it's not, it's kind of a long explanation. So the problem would be eventually proven that. So the statement which I believe is true, which is probably, you can say kind of almost a theorem, that if you take a positive knots, then these guys are the same. So basically, if you take only positive crossings, then, so somehow there is an interesting thing happening here. So basically, positive braids behave completely different from the negative braids. So basically, in the torus knots, which I would show you, they're all positive braids. So only positive crossings appear. So and in this sector somehow, in the positive sector, I think it should be somewhat easy to show that these answers are the same as the previous ones. For the negative ones, I don't quite know. So.
Yeah, it's somehow not easy to know what the right framework to check the equality is.
Right.
But somehow for the actual Rushtigan-Triev invariants, there actually is a very good framework for checking that things give you the same answer. But you're using this like skew-how duality. But it's not so obvious how to do that for hump-like PT things.
I mean, another thing for mathematicians here. So basically, this framed matrix factorization thing to this space. I'm sorry. So it kind of provides you a categorification of the this guy. It kind of gives you a way to think about a finite Hegge category in terms of coherent shifts. That's something that was not known before. So you know, if you look at the coherent shift on the Steinbeck variety, it would give you a fine Hegge category. So, but this guy is gives you a coherent model for the finite Hegge category. So in the sense that you can show, the one thing we can show that if you take K series of this thing, so then this our morphism with the left, it provides you injection from the finite Hegge, you take Hegge algebra and it embeds inside of the convolution algebra inside here. So the one thing of which I'm not sure, this category might be a little bit bigger than the finite Hegge category. But you can definitely embed the finite Hegge category inside here. So,
well, but this could have done with the original category as well. Right?
That's true. So that's true.
And if you don't have the frame thing, the K group isn't going to be there by algebra,
yes, probably. I don't know. That's a kind of something that needs to be shown.
So doesn't make it reasonable to. Is it reasonable to expect that this category in the non-framed version that the character is just the category of, is just the trans category of Affine Steinberg. Oh, sorry, of Steinberg.
Could be, yeah. It's reasonable to expect.
Yeah. I mean, if it's reasonable to expect, it should probably be very difficult to see, right? Because it's the right is very close to Steinberg.
It could be, yeah. It could be true, yeah. That's true. Could be true. So, you know, it's also reasonable to expect that this, you know, that in some sense you can conjecture that this category is the same as the finite Hecke category. So I...
But you're saying it's not true?
I don't know whether it's true or not. The only thing I can show that there is embedding.
So that's, you think cohomology on this, or global sanctions on this framed, of this X-framed, but X-framed was something open in X. I mean, how good is... How well behaved is this cohomology? I mean, is this thing projective or something affine? I mean, after something like a quotient, or what does it have any kind of reasonable fineness properties? As for instance, if you take its, how do you know that if you take its, if you take the C star squared action, then somehow it has a finite dimensional weight spaces?
No, it's the same. You know, you can control non-compactness pretty easily. It's the same way. You know, basically, if you take a braid, take its closure. So then basically number of non-compact directions, number of components of the link. So for example, it's because, you know, this Lagrangians, which we just cut, you know. So basically, there is you can completely control what's going on with support of these things. So that's short answer to this. For example, if you work with knots, then the support would be compact.
Do I have finitely many fixed points?
If you restrict, that's not true, actually. That's what one surprise. That if you look at the free Hilbert scheme, so then C star cross C star doesn't have isolated torus
case. No, so on the support, neither on the support of you.
What?
But is it true that this variety of fixed points, that if you take a support, then the space of fixed points is going to be compact?
Yeah, it will be compact. If you take a critical oxo, then the torus fixed points would be just like, you know, it would be finitely many torus fixed points. So then you can just, you know, that's another thing I should have said, you know, the advantage of it, then you can do, now you can do a lot of localization computation. You can do a lot of things. You can kind of do localization. There are some subtleties here, so I don't want to bother people with this, a lot of details, but for example, you know, this theory is like honest homology theory. You cannot get it from K series. So if you take, if you pass to any case here, you lose a lot of information. That's one thing I should say. So that you cannot fake it by doing some case theory of coherent shifts on a flag or on a Hilbert scheme. So it's not enough. So you really need to work with homologies. You lose some. Right.
So, yeah. So you dismantle from by grouping to matrix factorizations.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any geometric under origin for this map? I mean, how do you decide to pick which matrix factorization to attach to which break group element?
Oh, so yeah, that's a very good question. So, well, that's where we got our inspiration on this direction from Bezrukavnikov's work. So basically, if you forget about Y variable, so then you want to look at the so if you take quotient by two copies of B, you get like a one flag variety and another flag variety. If you forget about X. So you have these two guys. It's one flag variety. This is another cotangent. This is another cotangent point, right? So inside of it, you can take a subset of the flags which are differ by this element W of your symmetric group. You know, that's so now you can just do usual Springer theory. So the Springer theory tells you that you take a set of two flags which are in relative position W, or W element of symmetric group. So you take structure shift of this graph of this element W. So on, and basically you wanna construct matrix factorization, which will have critical loci in this graph, and you can just construct it by hands in a rank one case, and then things work out. So on a sense, we just like guessed it. We just did it by hands. So basically, if you look at the case of SL2, then there is not many choices. You know, basically, okay. I'll explain it. This is actually really cool. So the statement here, let me just write one formal. So if you look at this potential, so maybe that's easy. So if you look at the potential, as I was saying, x at g y. And let's say x is upper triangular, let's say x0 minus x0, x1. Sorry, that's actually something that you can explain to high schooler, so I should have done it. So, and y is just strictly upper triangular. So you can actually discover that this guy factors. That's actually how the whole story started. That was the first computation we made, and that convinced us that there is something interesting here. So first of all, it's clear that if y is equal to 0, then the whole thing is 0. So then another thing, which is somewhat unexpected, that if you, so there is also this g, let's say it's g12, g11, g21, g12, g21, g22. Let me notice that if this guy is 0, so then you conjugate by the upper triangular matrix, and this thing is whole, it's 0. That means you have another factor. Okay, and then you have another, some extra factor f, which you can compute explicitly. So it's a triple product. It factors. So, well, this is our w. Now you can write a matrix factorization using this thing. So you can write matrix factorization, let's call it identity. That would be matrix factorization, let's call R, ring of functions on this N, G, B. That's our space. It's R, where one direction you have a differential G12, and another direction, so it's two periodic complex, which goes like this. And here it's Y times F. All right, that's the one guy. So then we have a positive crossing. So let's say, no, it's not positive crossing. That would be a fat point. That's, you know, if you know this theory of the knot homologies, people talk about this virtual intersection thing. So that would be this guy. So you take y, r, g12, f, r. And then there is one more guy, so where there is only one more option. You start, so here was G1, now we start with this F. All right. So this was identity, there was
And there is a knot, this is a triangle. So.
Right, and they form a triangle, right? So this.
Every time you have an XYZ.
So right. They form a triangle because it's you can form a triangle. So things, and then from here everything unfolds. That's actually how everything was invented, just from this computation. So. Right, thanks. That was a great question. That's actually. So the whole point that's the key. You want to have some kind of a. Matrix factorization, which is from which you can write these triangles. And by the way, you know, I should say that this guy here, this function f, that's this graph of this is the equation for the let's say it. You can. I just leave it like this. Sorry. So that's actually how it was invented. But you were saying that some other video was saying that you were saying that you've seen the, you know, you can find this kind of objects in physics literature already.
No. I'm wondering where.
Okay.
I mean, Kevin, idea seems to be
Kevin says.
Boundary conditions for the join, if this term are joined, you can promote it to boundary condition for gauge theory.
Right.
But I don't know if that would preserve the category of lines that we've seen.
I don't know how to see these matrix factorizations. I was trying to compute it, but it would be... You can't compute the category of lines in the boundary here. It would be really cool. It's kind of thinking about it.
And I should say that a lot of these things, of course, all of these constructions extend to the case when you replace GLN, like, you know, this GLN by any quiver. So then you get some interesting data about cyclotomic algebras and stuff like this.
What kind of braid groups do you use here at
Samuel? So you can get cyclotomic braid group, for example. You can get, you know, this thing is a categorification of Hecke algebras, but you can think about cyclotomic Hecke algebras. You can get them also. So. For that, you need to consider like higher rank versions of this.
What was the name of the state?
There is no analog of that. So that's something that we would like to see, but we don't know. So basically, like the hope was that we could construct. Anyways, there is no good analog of this.
Potentially, are you going to get knots in some? Can you get in this way some
knots on homologous
knots in some kind of non-trivial manifolds?
Yeah, so you can, but in different ways. So you can get it like I was explaining Kevin this morning. You can get something that way too. So you can get knots inside of the quotients of the sphere by this finite group. Kleinian singularities, usual things. You can get that too.
Is this tau GLN by each system?
I see that's by Hitchin system on what curve? On steep. Any curve?
I mean, these Lagrangians can be still kind of defined.
Uh-huh.
Pretty much using the sensor potential, but.
No, it's interesting. Yeah, it probably you can. Yeah.
With the sympathetic bosons, I mean.
You probably can, yeah.
So I would take maps from the maps on the curve to the flag and use the moment map. Set the Higgs field equal to the moment map. And so on.
Mm-hmm.
These matrix factorizations might also.
No, it's interesting, yeah. You're probably right. You probably it would be. Yeah, it's interesting. I definitely should try. You know, the one thing I'm just thinking about, so like if you look at the Hitchin system on CP1, on weighted CP1. We have this paper with GVA. And actually, it turns out like that's how you can start thinking about perverse shifts on the graded cyclically graded Lie algebras. And that's probably yeah, anyway. So that's very interesting. So we haven't looked at it.
So this could be a local.
Right, that would be a local model for this. For more global version. I mean, I was saying that somehow if your global curve is a CP1, then the local theory is almost the same as a global theory because you have cis direction. So maybe in this case, you'll have even more interesting theory.
The Jones-Wenzel representations
and
all this.
Jones-Wenzel projectors?
Yeah,
that could be done also. So that basically the Storr's fixed point. That's another thing which we're trying to work it out, like write it up. So from this construction, it's almost obvious what are the Jones-Wenzel projectors. So because if you have a variety with Storr's fixed points, well, like you know, we have a variety with cis direction. Then coherent shifts, every coherent shifts is a sum of delta functions of the torus fixed points with some weights. And this delta function of torus fixed points, that's exactly Jones-Wenzel projectors. So it just, we can work it out. So on the level of K theory, you get just, you know, if you, another thing I should say that how you pass from the homologous to the, from the usual Homflip PT polynomial, you take K theory for everything. On the level of K theory, you just get back your Jones-Wenzel projectors. It's literally Jones-Wenzel projectors you find in the textbooks. And
where do these representations live?
You were probably talking about, I'm talking about Jones-Wenzel projectors as, so you want to take, you want to decompose every braid as a sum over some idempotents. And this idempotents what's called Jones Wenzel projectors. And these Jones Wenzel projectors, there would be also some kind of elements of this category of matrix factorizations. So it still would be like matrix factorizations. But they, you know, they possibly, you know, they would, they could possibly be some kind of infinite complexes of these matrix factorizations. You can define them.
When are these Bray group representations unitary? What does that mean in this picture?
I don't know. That's I know.
It's a nice relationship to quantum groups and roots of unity. And
I don't know. That's these are all good questions. I don't know. So that's probably you should ask expert next to you. So he would. Sasha might know a little bit more about it. So okay, Sasha refuses. So, yeah, I think if Rukavnik would be around, he would have, you know, it's probably, look for this, this category, this construction is not too far from Rukavnikov constructions, you know, I should admit it. So maybe if you want to look.
I think, I'm sure that not too far, I mean something very precise or something. So it would be very nice if you could actually formulate this.
It's possible.
Maybe not right now.
Yeah, it's possible to formulate it. You know, I can. You know, it's supposed to be kind of semi-physics talks. I don't think anybody here would be like, interested in like Steinberg varieties and stuff.
It was so bad.
Yeah.
I mean, somehow, one of the nice things about this categorical stuff is there's a kind of unitarity which is automatic, right? Which is that, you know, if you have an equivalence of categories, it has to preserve the dimension of Hom spaces. And looking at the dimension of the Hom spaces, a pairing on the Grothendieck group, you can think of as kind of an inner product. When your Q is some kind of grading shift, you get exactly this sesquilinearity, right? The, you know, grading shift in one direction and Hom gives you grading shift the other direction. So with another one, it goes in the correct direction. So you sort of automatically have some kind of semi-linear form, but your action has to preserve as it's an equivalence of categories. But then, you know, actually matching that up with like unitary matrices, like you have to think a little carefully about.
Yeah, I think probably there should be a lot about this in works of Bezrukavnikov and Mirkovich. They probably understood it in some sense. I don't think we could add anything to what they already have done with our construction.
But to properly work with Q at a root of unity, do you have to replace C with a cyclotomic field?
We don't know how to do the root of unity in this situation. So.
It's much harder than
it's
that.
It's much harder, yeah. So that's.
Well, that is hard.
Still harder. All right, looks like Alex again.
Okay.